la 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 la.
Welcome to this week's episode of It's Easy Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. You know, every week I start out by saying I'm excited to have a guest on because all of my guests I've had a relationship with either through work, sports, high school. They're national figures, luminaries that I know something about. And I guess I'm going to keep saying that I'm excited because I truly am excited to have on the show today a gentleman that I met while I was at Ithaca College and someone that I have followed since we have both left Ithaca College. And he's doing amazing things, not only at his institution, but he's a national thought leader in information technology in the higher education space. That's one aspect to him. Another aspect to him, he's just an overall good guy and likes to see people succeed and has some very unique thoughts and ideas around how things get done. So ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, I welcome to the podcast this week, my good friend, Mr. Keith McIntosh. I'm gonna say Keith Mac McIntosh. Keith, welcome to the show.
Well, Brother Gerald, thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor to be on your show. And I tell everybody, you know, yeah, please call me Mac hereafter. I appreciate the formal recognition. But when I hear Mac, Keith, it's usually because I've done something wrong. My lady, my grandmother, my mom, and my wife is calling me out. So just call me Mac. I appreciate it.
All right. Good, good. Well, let's just jump right in. You're on this show, sir, because you have a story to tell. And you're a very inspirational person. I've watched you as a leader, someone that is a change agent, I would say. And quite frankly, someone that just has ideas that are trending towards the future. So what we want to do today is start out as we do with every guest, is who is Keith McIntosh? What drives him? What was his early years like foundationally? And what undergirds all that Mac does today?
Wow, that's such a deep, I've watched what you do with other guests and I was amazed how they have a response. So I'll try to take on this challenge. I actually talked to my kids and my daughter and my wife a little bit about who am I? What would you tell? And we kind of come to this agreement, right? First and foremost, I have to say I'm the son of James and Mary McIntosh, my mother and father, who I would not be here without them. And I'm not just talking about, you know, bearing me as a child. I'm talking about raising me up to be the man that I am today. From there, I'm the big brother of Cheryl, Jasmine, and Jade, my three sisters. And I'm very fortunate, very blessed to be married to Penny. And we have three kids. Both of us had a son with our previous relationship. So I have a son, Dane, a son, Ian, and we had a daughter together, Paige. And Paige is an HBCU grad. She was a Bowie State University graduate.
Congratulations.
And we're also blessed to be grandparents. So I have two grandchildren, Daniel, who is 8, I believe, and then Miles, who is 5 years old. Other than that, I'm just a person really, you know, at the core who I am, I think I'm a very simplistic guy, Gerald. You kind of touched on it when you first introduced me. I am basically a person who wants to do good, treat everybody I meet with the utmost of respect. I'm not gonna treat anybody in any status or position or money any different than I would treat somebody else. And try to be helpful with all people in all situations. I'm not saying I do that every day, but that's what I wake up intending to do and that's what I try to do each and every day. I dig people, I love people. I'm an extrovert. I just love being around folks and trying to help people reach their goals and help them be successful. My wife says that, you know, she's often called me a chameleon. And when I first heard that, I used to take offense to it, but as they break it down, even my kids say, yeah, Dad, you're kind of a chameleon. And what that means, I guess what they're telling me is that you have the ability to be just dropped off in any situation with any person and fit in. right? And they tell me they think that's pretty rare. And you know, I don't look at it as anything special, but I think it's just because I appreciate being around people and I can always find something to connect with them about. So that's what I try to do. I'm just as country hanging out in a country bar as I am in an R&B or a jazz club. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, you know,
the first thing you mentioned was your mom and dad. And I saw your eyes kind of light up. What was the McIntosh household like with mom and dad? And what were the life lessons they gave you that you said that they made turned you into the man you are today? So you would have had many machinations throughout your life, but mom and dad seemed to have a special place. What was that like?
Yeah, both of them individually and collectively had an influence on my life. You know, when I think back to my childhood, there was a grounding of purpose and like doing something with your life. And some of the things I tell you that I value and who I am as a person were things that I think were instilled in me by my parents, right? To be good, to be respectful, to be helpful to somebody, to be humble, to understand that, you know, too much who is given, much is expected, those types of lessons. Mm-hmm. Learning about faith. Both my mom and dad were people of faith, and so we grew up in a church. I think about my dad was such a respected leader. He was in the military, and I followed in his footsteps and joined the military. And one of the things that I saw about him was the way he treated people, you know, and charisma. So, you know, I don't arrive with this thinking of who I am with some original thought. I think I had natural observation each and every day. My mom was a big stickler on how I communicated, how I looked, right? She was making sure that I carried myself a certain way and I spoke a certain way. And she was a stickler about it, right? Now, such a stickler when you're a kid and you hear instructions, you kind of go, but then when you get older, you're so thankful for that instruction, right? Because it carries you forward to today. And I think I have the ability through my mom and my dad to be able to hold my own in communication with any audience and understand how to relate to people very humbly, right? Mm-hmm. I get that from both of them. They installed a strong sense of family. And if like you and I both share that, you know, I dig, I said, I'm most happiest, most at home when I'm just hanging with my family, doing nothing, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, and that, you know, that doesn't sound super exciting, but that's what I like doing, right? Just hanging out with my family.
Yeah. So mom and dad had that influence on you. But, you know, when I met you, I would say you were still on an upward trajectory.
I like to think I still am.
Yeah. You still are. And you came in with this presence and you started making things happen. That doesn't happen overnight. So mom and dad gave you this grounding. Mm-hmm. But coming up in your early years, what were the proving grounds for you? What was... You know, I even go back with some of my guests all the way back to grade school, elementary school, middle school. What was that like and what led you to the path that you took?
Yeah, you know, I think about growing up, that's a great question because what it really does, I don't arrive here today just plopped on the earth, right? There's a lot of situations that grew me. Some were conscious on my part. Some things were happening to the parallel to me that I never knew. And then some things were happening with me that were forcing me to get out of my skin and grow. You know, as a young person, my dad being in the military and I'm being a military brat, I think one of the first proving grounds is just actually being a military brat. Growing up in different parts of the United States, growing up in, you know, I was a young kid in the Philippines. I was a young kid. I went to third through sixth grade in Italy, Northern Italy. One of my best friends was an Italian kid who lived off base. And so I hung out with him and I spent a lot of time with their families. And it gave me appreciation of what, you know, what other life is like, not just being a U.S. citizen, but just what other people are like. And there's a lot of similarities in the families there and upbringing. But then moving about our country, right? I think I went to four elementary schools. I went to three middle schools and I went to three high schools, right? And each of these have varied in various different states. And one school system I came back to quite often. So I went to elementary school, middle school, and high school in a little bitty town in Southeast Kansas called Independence, Kansas. And that's where I ended up graduating high school from. But those experiences as a kid, and then playing sports too. You were an athlete. I wasn't as good as athlete as you to go into college, but you know, when you arrive in different places, you're immediately on the outside, right? And you have to figure out a way to fit in and find new friends and connect. And one of the things that helped me, I was a decent student in school. I always averaged B's and A's, and once I got a C, but was playing sports. So I, you know, my first thing I knew, no matter what I was going to do when I got there, I was going to be trying out for football, basketball, track, and baseball, right? And but the challenge with that, though, Gerald, sometimes when you come in different places, there are folks who were born and raised in those towns, and you're just coming in as an outsider. It's hard to unseat somebody who's ahead of you, and you know. But it made me learn the value of working hard for something. Mm-hmm. Without like an immediate payoff, working on a team to a common objective, things like that, right? Yeah, yeah. I'm deeply appreciative of those experiences. I made so many different acquaintances. I couldn't make deep friendships because you're only around people 2-3 years at a time and then you're gone. And this is way before the generation now where you can connect with Facebook and social media.
Yeah. So that it was, given that then, that explains to me then your ability to be in any space. So you were being trained unconsciously and not even knowing that, you know, that was something that was going to be innate to you. So
absolutely.
You graduate from high school, you said Independence, Kansas, and you graduated high school. What was next for you after high school?
Well, so when I went to high school, it's a funny story. So here's the thing. I after I finished, I was so active in high school, I didn't think about it. I played in all sports and I lettered in all sports that I participated in. I was on the French club. I was in student body, government, and just active in a lot of activities. And as you get to your senior year, all my friends and colleagues, they were like going to college. They were, you know, in Kansas, the big thing is to go to Kansas University, University of Kansas, or go to Kansas State or go to Wichita State University. They all knew exactly what they were going to school for and what job they wanted after that. I had no clue, Gerald. I didn't know what I wanted. I did, right? I kept waiting for this epiphany to happen and it never did, right? And so I chose to go to college without a game plan. And I think for me, that was a horrible idea, right? Because I think college takes a commitment of no, and you got to know where you want to go and what you want to do. So right out of high school, I bounced around. I went to three different colleges and I finally flunked out. I went to three different colleges. I ended up back, you know, following my dad around to different schools. I finally went back to a community college and still wasn't really interested in college. I just didn't, nothing resonated with me, right? And since nothing resonated with me, I was doing all the wrong things. I was not spending enough time in class. I was definitely not spending enough time in my studies. And I know how to do it. I just wasn't interested,
right?
So when I finally, here's how the story went. My dad, I was living with my father. I was hanging out doing, just living a fun 19, 20 year old life with no, and I'll let you fill in the blanks, with no responsibilities whatsoever. Like sleeping in and staying up late at night, let's say that. And my dad woke me up one night and said, tomorrow morning, we're going down to talk to the Air Force recruiter. And that was the end of that discussion. Next day, we went down to the Air Force recruiter, as he said, because he was a man of his word. If he said we're going to do something, we're going to do something. And best decision ever happened to me. I enlisted in the Air Force in December of 1982 on a delayed enlistment, and I ended up going in and doing my oath and walking across and going to basic training in October of 1983. And then I spent 24 years in the Air Force. And that is a whole nother journey, but that really grew me as a leader and as a manager and as a supervisor and managing people. The Air Force really grew me up as a leader.
You spent 24 years in the Air Force?
Yeah. And compared to my father, who did 30, he always, you know, he's passed since 2010, but he always reminds me he did 30 and he made and he made the rank. I made one less rank than he did.
Yeah, he did. Okay.
And not that there was competition in the ranks, but there was competition in the ranks. So he always made his he made his rank a little bit faster than I did, and he went higher than I did, and he always kind of held that over me just a little.
Just a little. What was that experience like? Because as you were mentioning, going in, you kind of had this laissez-faire type attitude to, you know, discipline, structure, and things like that. So you said it was the best thing that could happen to you. Why is that? Why do you feel that way?
Well, a couple things, right? So this is divine intervention right here. There's a couple ways you can come into the military. You can either come in as an enlisted person, which is what I did. and you can come in as an officer. And the high level distinction is you come in with a degree or you come in without a degree. So I was obviously coming in without a degree, so I came in as a listed person. Now, on that path, you take your tests of what your aptitudes are. It's a battery of questions. You do the best you can. And then the Air Force, or SAM, picks what occupation you're going to be in. Air Force occupation. They picked in 1983 communications for me, telecommunications to be exact, which morphed into computers, information technology, which is what I do today, right? So just divine intervention right there, that the career that the Air Force picked for me was a career that fit me and that I really, really loved. The second thing, the military has a very structured program on how to grow and develop leaders. And they're basically like, you do A, B, C, and D, then you can get E, F, G, and H. Okay. So I'm all in. I was like, is that what you say? So I pushed all my chips to the table, in the center of the table. I went for it. And I ended up excelling. I also was very blessed to have some outstanding leaders that I could see in front of me and some role models, right? Some that I had connection with, that I spoke with, and they could mentor me. But others that I kind of got to see from afar, but close enough where I could see how they led and how they managed. And that includes from senior enlisted people, but also to one star all the way up to four star generals, right? And so as a young 23-year-old person, to be around one, two, three, four star generals, to see them up close, you know, once you get past the shock and awe and the nervousness to be around that, you know, somebody of that stature, you learn so much. And some of it, I mean, honestly, Gerald, I wasn't in there taking notes, but I think you just pick you stuff up. Yeah, you just absorb it, right? So there was a little bit of that. So I think the structure, the supervisor mentors, and the career field that was picked for me, all that wrapped up in a bow just helped me. And that really just started me on my road to where I am today.
I want to ask a very interesting question and tie your dad and your experience in the Air Force together.
Yeah.
One of the things I ask some of my guests every now and then is, when you look at the structure and having a strong father figure in your life, you know, he came and said, tomorrow morning, we're going down, and you went down. But dad doing that for you kind of launched you.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things you see today with our young brothers, how does that tie back for you? And you're a dad. You have, I think you mentioned, two sons.
Mm-hmm.
And how through that lens, that experience, your dad, the Air Force structure, is that something that you see our young brothers need today? And in terms of having them to excel or be the next Keith McIntosh, is that something that you see or try to influence? I'm asking you that because you're just a people person, mm-hmm. and you're always trying to get people to excel.
Yeah, you know, so great question. I want people, whoever they are, to be the next them, not me.
Yeah, right.
I want them to be the next them. I want them to find out who they are, what makes them tick. I think I take some similarities in my parenting from my mother and father. I think I'm blessed to have a wonderful partner and wife, and my wife, Penny, who helps guide me. And we kind of co-parent, and I learned a lot from her on the journey. But one of the things I have to say the story before I get to the answer to your question. My first duty station after basic training, I ended up being stationed at the same base with my dad, right? So now that's a unique thing, right? Of all the places I could have been stationed in the world, and Air Force is a worldwide organization, I end up being stationed at the same base. Now, I'm 6 foot and over 200 pounds, but I stand and look like my old man. I look like him. So there was no, and plus, you know, you're wearing a uniform, you have your name tag. There's no place I could go on the base, nowhere. Hey, you're Max boy. Now I'm little Max, so he's the Mac, right? So they're like, you're Max boy. So I couldn't get away with anything if I wanted to get away with it. But I also learned a lot, and I knew I had to hold myself to a really higher standard. So that's another thing I would add, because my dad was there and I didn't want to let him down or have anybody look down on me and look less favorable on me, because I was his son and he was a senior leader on the base. But when I started on my journey to become a supervisor leader, I think what my dad's approach and what I learned myself was take care of the people. Take care of people. I mean, the Air Force says it two ways about leadership. It's the art of influencing people to get something done, right? The art of influencing people. You can't tell people what to do. You can't make people do something, but you can understand them enough, Gerald, where you can influence them. And everybody is unique and different. And so you need to understand what makes each person tick. Then from what you understand for how what each person ticks, then you can understand how you can best influence them or provide leadership for them, right? Leadership to me is being a servant. It's not about me and my title, my role, the money, whatever prestige people see us have in these roles. It's about helping my team individually first, but collectively get their goals accomplished, achieve their dreams, and whatever I can do to help support them, whether that's providing encouragement, providing the resources, doing some blocking and tackling in front of them to help them make the road me smoother for them. That's what I should be doing, right? So any of those types of things. And so for my love of people, I really, and that's what keeps me, as my family says, you continue to evolve as a person. Well, because I keep running into new people. You know, so if I, you know, if I was no longer going to evolve, I think it was because I stayed with the same static group of people and I've done everything I could to know each and every person around me. But I think because I'm always privileged, Gerald, in these positions to meet new people, I'm like, I don't know anything about that person. I want to learn this, and this about that person, right? And then the more I know this person, they introduce me to five other people. Well, yeah. That kind of just keeps me going. So what really jazzes me up is when I see somebody in need, they need help and I can help them and they succeed. Or I see somebody who doesn't believe they can get something accomplished and they do. To get back to your question, that's why I mentor so many people that I try to mentor now, especially Black and Brown people, right? If you look at my history of mentoring since I've been in higher education, most of them have been Black and Brown because there's not a lot of us out there, especially in higher ed IT, right? I distinctly remember going to my first higher education conference, which is EDUCAUSE, which is a national conference for higher education IT folks. It was huge. I was blown away. I had never been anything like that. I had just recently retired out of the military in 2008. It's 2009, I'm going to my first EDUCAUSE conference in Anaheim, California. I don't know if you've been out there, but the convention center, huge. And I remember going, oh my gosh, how am I gonna navigate this place? I don't know anybody. I took like a stack of 500 business cards and I handed all of them out, Gerald. I handed every one of my business cards out and I came home with 500 business cards. That was my goal. I said, I'm going to meet people. But I remember going, where are the Black people here? I really did. And I went up to a very high perch in one of the main, it's like a third floor open area. And I look and I could just see a sea of white people. And this is not an indictment of the situation. It's just facts. There were just not a lot. And I told myself then, if I could achieve my goals of getting to where I want to be in higher education IT, and it's something my mother and father taught me, I have to give back. So I have to look back down the ladder I'm climbing and see if I can't pull up a couple other brothers and sisters, right? So that's what I try to do, right? Not going to say I can help everybody, but as many people as I possibly can. And if anything, I had somebody tell me the other day, I had just talked to a young lady last week. And she said, it was the first time we met on a video conference, but she said, I went to a conference and I saw you and I heard you speak and you were so inspiring. And so one of the things I took from that was, you never know who you touch and you might touch a lot of lives and never meet the lives that you touch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I take on that, you know, there's a whole lot of talk about being a role model, but I know what I'm trying to do is model something that others can come in behind me and go, I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I want to have happen. I'd love by the time I retire from higher education, there are so many folks of color in IT that they forget my name. Did I freeze on you?
Yeah, you froze a little, but that's okay. That's part of it. So let me ask you this question this way. 24 okay. years in the Air Force.
Yep.
And you come into high, did you come straight into higher education from the Air Force?
I did. That's a very that's a heck of a story too.
Yeah, but we need to hear the stories because when I first met you, you were shooting the lights out somewhere. And people say, well, you brought him to the East Coast. So I want to understand all of what you just said about leadership, your leadership style, and how you were able to apply that in higher ed, because you know higher ed is a totally different structure, totally different environment, atmosphere. How were you able to navigate that?
Very, very carefully. So one of the things I learned in the latter part of my career was watching some of my senior Air Force leaders I really respected, when they were getting out, some of them, when we say get out, you know, you end your career, but you're young enough to go have a second career most of the time. And you can be so wrapped up in that culture that you don't understand that other environments can have an entirely different culture. And so you need to get your mind and spirit right for that, that change. And that's what I saw. I saw demeanors and lives that I felt like folks could do better. They hadn't made the adjustment, I guess is the polite way to say it. And I said, okay, I want to be different. If whatever I choose to go in, I have this as a foundation, but I can't speak military. I don't want to go in there and just be seen as a military guy. So I will tell you, the first 6 months, it was not tough, but challenging in the fact that that's all folks saw of me. Mm-hmm. They could not help but see a military. I don't care if I spoke all the right lingo, knew all the right people. They were like, you spent 24 years in the military. You've been in higher education 6 months. So that's a given. All right, great. So it took me 2, 3, 4 years to kind of shed that. I was very fortunate that I had my first higher education job. And I'll tell the story now is a gentleman named Kirk Kelly. I'm still friends with him today. He's a CIO at Portland State University. He took a chance on me and hired me as a direct report under him. And he was the one that, you know, pointed me in the right direction to find the right mentors. He talked to me about EDUCAUSE, all those types of things. He took a chance on me. And I ought to say thank you to him. You also took a chance on me, right? Because I came out of the military, I felt 100% confident in my ability to lead people. I felt 100% confident in how to manage technology. I didn't have the confidence, and I wouldn't try to, you know, be untruthful with anybody to say I understood the higher education landscape, because it's different, Gerald. I mean, it's just different, right? So, but what I did was I told people, like, look, I don't know nothing from nothing when it comes to that. I know this, this, and this, and here's how I'm going to learn, and I want you to teach me. So I went to various people around the campus. I was at Pima Community College in Tucson, Arizona, eighth largest community college in the country at the time. We had 6 teaching locations, 106 campuses, 135 teaching locations. And we had technology supported. My team supported technology in all those spaces. So what I did was I befriended people in the finance department. I befriended people in the registrar's office. I befriended people in the financial aid. And I said, please mentor me. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I don't know nothing from nothing. I'm telling you that right now. So if I ask you a question, school me up, help me out, right? And that's what I did. And then I told my boss, Kirk, I said, I aspire to be in your seat one day. Please throw to me all the things you think I need to deal with to help me prepare to get in your seat. And that's what he did.
Yeah.
So that was my approach, Gerald. So what did that mean? My day job would say I had to be to work from 8:30 to 5. I worked it out with my wife. I showed up at 7:30 and I left at 7:30, 8 o'clock every night, because I wanted to tack on the stuff on the other end. So what did that mean? I had to hustle 100 mile an hour more than what was average. If I would have just done what was called for me to do as a director, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And I had to do more.
That's a very interesting point to make, because that's something I know those of us that are in certain roles try to share with young people, is the extra effort that you have to put in. But Pima Community College is a huge community college. And obviously your star in higher education just started to grow. Now, I was fortunate enough to hire you, or whatever it is, partner with you. You know, you're much wiser than I am.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't say older anymore. I got in trouble in church recently. But you came to Ithaca College, and we were working together there, and you did something that just said to me, and I'll just share this with you now, and why I wanted you to have you on the show. You came in and you basically pivoted that shop in 12 months to a different reality. How did you do that? I saw it, but I want my audience to hear, when we talk about leadership and change management and the trajectory of your career, how did you accomplish that?
Yeah, so one, this is a perfect segue for me to say, thank you, Gerald, for inviting me and hiring me to come work at Ithaca. I wouldn't be where I'm at today as well. You're going to hear me say that often. if it wouldn't have been for Kirk hiring me in at Pima Community College, and I wouldn't be at Richmond if it wouldn't have been for you hiring me in Ithaca. So I want to say thank you to you for that. I think the first thing to start it off was you did something I thought was really, really wise. You hired a group of people, I don't know if you remember this, to evaluate the technology, organization, the infrastructure and the services and the people. And that was something the final candidates got to take a look at, right? That helped, you know, close the gap between what I thought I knew about Ithaca to what I knew about Ithaca, right? So it gave me some launching points to start with. And I actually used that as part of my interview process, right? When I interviewed, there were some things that I saw in that report that I was telling, I was very honest, and this is the way I always interview. I'm gonna be 100% me because I want you to see the advertisement is gonna match the reality, right?
Right.
So you don't know this, but when I interviewed with the IT team, I remember speaking to the IT team. I said, we have a lot of, if I'm fortunate to be hired, we have a lot of work to do. And that's going to start on day one. I'm going to get to know you, but we're going to have some long hours ahead of us because I don't see a way to get around some of the problems I'm seeing here. And some of these problems start with the folks that are in this room with me right now. Now, I'm sure they could have walked away and said, I don't know, I want this person to be the CIO. But that's what I told them, right? And I specifically looked at one person longer than I looked at the others because that was an infrastructure problem and this person was in charge of infrastructure. So when I got there, that person had already self-selected to leave,
right?
Then I think the other thing that was really fortunate for me, and I'm going to get to what I do, I think you gave, I tell this analogy to young folks all the time. I said, as a supervisor leader, you want to create what, this is something I learned in the military, create a bow wave. A bow wave, you know, is something that's out there. A bigger ship pushes the heavy water out of the way, and then you can come in and swim in the calm water. You set that up, right? So you were always out there being an advocate in front of me, right? And it helped set the, kind of gave me a bow wave to swim behind. I think what I did at Ithaca was a combination of several things. One, it was trying to put some organization and structure around how we do work. Be honest and candid, very direct about, wait a minute, we're not all that in a bag of chips. We have some holes and highlight and be honest about where we're deficient. Be honest about that. Have conversations with members of the campus because I think it was important to build relationships because I think where we were with technology at Ithaca, we were so deficient and behind. I think our reputation was in a bad state. And I think for me, I've always viewed that if the relationship of the leader with the campus is connected and has high respect, there's gotta be something going on good. So I felt like in addition to the work I needed to do on my team internally, and we had real problems. We had, as you know, we had infrastructure challenges and we had organizational people challenges. And so what we did is we laid those out, right? And said, these are the problems we have. We racked and stacked the problems in the priority order, felt like, what are we gonna start working on? Let's work it. We worked on building a strategy together. We worked on building a new governance program together. We looked at our organizational structure and restructured in a way to help us be a more modern, up-to-date. There was still some work to do when I left. But those three things were galvanizing points. They brought all the members of our team together because I was trying to build a sense of team and ownership and understanding, look, I'm not here to be punitive. I'm here to say, honestly, I'm here now. We are deficient. It's going to take us, not somebody outside of IT, to fix these problems. So let's get busy fixing these problems. Those are the things as how we did it. And that required both individual conversations and a lot of group conversations, right? So I spent a lot of time. I met with every member of the team to get their feedback, to connect with them, to understand who they are and what they were doing, their challenges and their opportunities. But then I met with teams. And then I spent time in their offices seeing how they did work. Right. So just kind of being a student to see, you know, and say, for me, I can say, one, it could build a connection with them. But also I could say, why do we do that? Do we need to do that? Right. So I can actually spend time with them. And then I think over time, it's kind of like a flywheel. You know, when you first get in there, I'm pushing on it. Boy, it was a lot. And Gerald, you may not have noticed, we worked some long hours there.
Yeah, I know. Well, the reason why I asked you that is because I had a firsthand view of you doing it. Some of the stuff you just shared, I didn't know, obviously, because you're a leader that I could basically say run with it. But here is the key thing. When you look at leaders today, now you're at the University of Richmond doing amazing things. Mm-hmm. And you're now a board member of NACUBO, and educause and all these things. There's a reason why I asked you that question, because I wanted the audience to hear. And you hit it dead on. Change management. So as you're going through now in your career and you're continuing, I think you still have further to go. I have no doubt in my mind. But when you look back on that and the work you're doing here now at University of Richmond and the advocacy work you're doing across the country, how do you tie all of that together? And where is that pointing you to today?
Wow, you asked some deep questions, Ben. You asked a really deep question. So I think it comes all the way back to who I said I was at the very beginning of our conversation. At my core, I just like to help people. I really do. I love people. And I think all of those things drive. So I come into University of Richmond. How can I help? What do we need to do? And that leads me to do things inside what I'm charged to do inside of IT. But also, hey, there are things happening on campus. I can lend my voice or my expertise or my time as a leader, as a counselor, as an advisor to other campus leaders on campus. So that's the connectivity. And I think those types of things, and then working really disrespectfully, very respectfully with folks, led me to be on things like the EDUCAUSE board, which was an interesting, I've earned, I think, the respect and admiration of colleagues across the country that I was put on the ballot. I think it was the third time I was put on the ballot, because it's a very highly competitive process, but I finally got elected in 2016. And through the process, I'm now, I spent the last year as a treasurer, 2 years as a treasurer. And so I chaired the finance committee, and now I am no longer the treasurer, but I'm the vice chair of the board, right? And I think that's because, I'd like to think that's because of how I've carried myself and how I've treated people. And I think there's respect and admiration. Yakubo, what a serendipitous conversation that was. When I was at Pima Community College, I was asked to participate in a 360 review of the University of Arizona CIO, Michelle Noren, who's a friend of mine. And Michelle, because Pima and University of Arizona are in Tucson, I was asked by the provost. So I joined as an outside advisor, a 10-person team who spent about 3 to 4 months together with folks. And there was a woman, I'm sure enough going to forget her name now, but she was on the advisor committee with me, the evaluation committee, and she's in the finance portion of higher education. She became a Nakubo board member, and one of the things that Nakubo, I love, they bring in outside folks, other folks from outside of the business and finance office. And when they decided they needed to have an IT professional as CIO on the board, she thought of me. And she put my name on there. And then one thing led to another, and I was put on the board of Nakubo in 2016. And there's a 3-year term, and they reelected me in 2019. So I must have done something right. So I served I'll serve until 2022. And I'm going into my last year. And this last year, the chair of the board asked me to be the secretary of the board. So I'm going to serve on the executive committee. So I must have done something right there as well. Yeah. But all of those, Gerald, is just the spirit of how can I help?
Yeah, how can I help? Now, you have been helping in a number of fields. You're an IT professional. You're an Army guy.
Air Force, don't do that. Don't do that. Air Force.
Well, I get them all mixed up. Here I am now in Orlando, and all five are close by. All five disciplines are close by in a research that we have.
Yes.
But you also are an advocate, as you mentioned before, is to change in some ways the mix, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing that? What are your steps there? Are you think you're making headway? How is that going for you?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think you're talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, and advocacy that way. My advocacy for diversity, equity, inclusion actually started back when I was in the military, right? It's just something that I didn't really talk about, but I was always pushing about it. And I think it stems from how I grew up as a military brat and realizing there's just a lot of talented people wrapped in many different packages, right? And I think we make really horrible, arbitrary decisions based on our biases and our prejudices and our fears and our doubts, right? I think, no, we need to understand the strengths of all talent that's on this planet, and all, especially those we're privileged to lead. And I can, and if we're honest, we look around and go, wait a minute, is this demographic that we're working with really reflect the work, the people that's in our community? And if it doesn't, what can we do about it? And I think, like you and I as leaders, we have a responsibility that we can't run from, we can't shirk. We need to figure out what it is that we need to do to make the environment better, right? And so a couple of things I think about, one I talk about all the time, is just inclusive leadership. Just practice inclusive leadership, right? Have courage, have commitment, have curiosity about people that are different from you. Check yourself and understand your own biases. What biases do I bring to bring to work each and every day? Why do I have those biases? How are those biases informing my thoughts, my actions, and my words? If my thoughts and actions and words, are they leaning to bring people in and making them feel like they belong and they can thrive here? Are they running counter to that, right? So the only person you really can affect a change of, but sometimes we can't do a good job of that, is ourselves. So I think you start with the person in the mirror. You work on your challenges and biases and understand what do you need to get right as a leader, try to make sure you can be more inclusive. And then you can branch out to your area of a responsibility. And I think you need to use your voice and your platform to try to build that. And so what I've tried to do each and every place, I started at Ithaca. When I got to Ithaca College, through those conversations individually and collectively, one of the first things I found out, you and I talked about it, there was kind of a good old boy system there that really kind of worked with the men, did not work with the women. And that's a problem that's been pervasive in IT, that it can be very gendered toward men and it kind of make the women feel like they're outsiders, and men get the more preferred technology positions that help them advance, and women get the softer jobs that don't help them advance.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that, right? So as a leader, I call that out and say, that's not right. Why is that, right? And so that's when I partner with Dr. Belisa Gonzalez, a colleague you and I both know. Mm-hmm. And we created a team, and we started having workshops in IT to talk about gender. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we first put this together, some of the men on the team rolled in there and kind of sat down, stern face, arms crossed, right? But we were doing this, and I told them, I said, I'm going to persist. It's going to keep happening, because as long as I hear it, this is what we're going to do. It didn't take long, but before folks were coming in, they were sitting down, their arms unclutched, they were opening up, and they were listening to their female colleagues and understand some of the challenges and woes they were having in the workforce. I also, one of the things I loved about Ithaca College, and it was something that was started, I think, by Dave Weil that was there. We had the annual IT conference that was there on campus. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I did coming in was I used my network of relationships and people, and I invited guest speakers in, right? Based on what I was hearing from the women, my purpose was to invite diverse leaders, primarily women, to come on campus to speak. So both the men, but more importantly, the women can see IT leaders that were women who were really doing it really, really well, right? So that's what I try to do. When I came here, serendipity, being an interracial couple coming here to a seat of the Confederacy, we had some thoughts. We had to think about what is it, there's reality and there's our perception. What is the South going to be like? And we did as much research and homework we could. We did research on the University of Richmond, which is a predominantly white institution that integrated for the first time in 1968. And I got very fortunate to have met that individual, Barry Green, really cool man. But when I got here, just a year after we were here, Charlottesville happened. If you remember what happened in Charlottesville, my wife and I, Charlottesville sits about 45 minutes east of west of us, 45 minutes to 60 minutes away. So we went to visit that maybe like 3 to 4 weeks before that broke off. So we had just walked those spaces for the first times in our lives when we saw all that violence and the tiki torches and the Klansmen and it's all the hatred that was being spewed. And then, the horrible attacks, the motorist killed Heather Heyer. Well, when I came back to work, that happened on a Friday, Saturday. When I got back to work on Monday, oh my gosh, everybody was talking about it, but we weren't talking about it. It was like, what just happened? So I decided, to bring people together. I said, let's have a conversation inside my team and my division, and I'll get through this really quick. That started as a conversation with my team to just unpack that. And I really modeled that, Gerald, off of what you had done at Ithaca. You had started conversations at Ithaca where you were bringing people in together to really, you know, talk about diversity and inclusion. I think folks were on the peripheral, had never really had the education, awareness, understanding what really was like to be Black or brown or be somebody of a different ethnicity or a different demographic. And so with that as a backdrop, I started something like that at Richmond. And, you know, what eventually the word got out, right? I was having these divisional conversations, and then my people on my team, just like every college university, we know people all over campus. Well, can I come? No, it's just for the division. Can I come? No, it's just for the division. I always ask my division, like, other people want to come. Like, so about a year in, we opened it up to faculty. No, we opened it up to other staff. And then about 6 months after that, we opened up the faculty. About 6 months after that, we opened it up to students. So now, 3.5 years later, we're still going.
Oh, wow.
It's called Intersections. We've been meeting every Wednesday, noon to one, talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, culture, awareness. I took Wednesday noon to one from you, brother. Because I figured that's a time middle of the week, and I had it. And I said, I'm convenient. It's going to meet at the time that's going to be most comfortable for me. Yeah. But we've had some really great conversations. And interesting enough, Gerald, when the pandemic hit, I was a little worried, but more people could attend because it was virtual and you'd have to worry about hustling from one side of the campus to another side of the campus to get to a physical place to have a meet. So we've had such rich conversations and look what's happened. So much has happened in this last year, year and a half. You know, if you go all the way back to George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, all the way up to today, Intersections was a place where people, when after these incidents happened, on average, we'd have 20, 30 people show up. But we had, after George Floyd, we had a Zoom call with 200 people in it.
Wow.
Right? Wow. Because people knew about it, and it's now actually recognized as a resource on our diversity, equity, inclusion page, right?
Awesome.
That was not a vision that I had set out to do. I was just starting to have it started trying to help my team wrestle with, grapple with what we just witnessed. And then now it's grown to where it is. So I, you know, like, again, I said, that's the story of my life. Just trying to help people.
Mac, well, you know, I will say this to you. One of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast is for what you're sharing today. And I tell people all the time, there are leaders that I've ran across and there are some that I consider change agent. There's a difference in my mind. And you fit that bill. Now, one of the things I want to do, believe it or not, we're close to almost an hour. You believe that?
It's crazy. Yeah, it went by fast. I was looking, I said, wow.
But I have to ask you this. This podcast is about inspiration. It's about viewing things that we see every day through a different lens. And I always ask my guests, what words of inspiration and hope they can leave with the audience? The audience that pretty much keys in and we get responses from, believe it or not, are from parents, grandparents, believe it or not, young people. Mm-hmm. It's a broad spectrum of people. Mm-hmm. But what they will say to me or the producer is the authenticity of the guest. Mm-hmm. So in your own words, when you look back on the last, I'll say 48 minutes we've been talking, what words of inspiration can you leave, or what thoughts are on your heart that you could leave with the audience as they are coming along, seeing inside a pandemic, about to get out of a pandemic, unemployment, you know, things look stagnant. Some might say, I feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. What words of inspiration and encouragement could you leave or give us today around that sentiment?
Yeah. Really, really great questions, Gerald. You know, everybody's life experience is so different. But I, you know, I did not arrive here, and I'm sure you didn't either, Gerald, without my own challenges and setbacks. And I mean, there were some setbacks that were major in my life. And so I tell people, it's not about the setbacks, right? It's about what kept me going is my attitude about where and where I wanted to go. So I was very crystal clear about where I wanted to go with my life. I was very crystal clear about how I wanted to get there. I'm not gonna try to step on people's backs. I wanna get there and be respectful of folks, but clarity about where I wanted to go and clarity about how I want to get there. That set goals for me. And then I went back and I did this. I don't do it as detailed as I once did it when I was younger, but my wife jokes like every year I would sit down. And my daughter does it now. She just told me this about 2 hours ago, that sit down and set goals for yourself, right? Anything that I've achieved in life, Gerald, and now some of these things were byproducts. Like I told you, I got on the Cuba board. That was just a blessing of having connections with people. But the major things that have happened in my life is because I set it as a target. I looked at honestly where I was at compared to where I needed to go. And I laid out a roadmap to get me from there to there. And then I worked that roadmap. I stayed focused on doing that. So what I would tell people often is, you can achieve anything you want to achieve as long as you are the more crystal clear you can be about it, and then the willing and to put in the work, mm-hmm. right? You have to be willing to put in the work. We do things with, for, and by people. So you're not going to get there on your own. You're not going to get there because you're the best looking. You're not going to get there because you're the smartest. You're not going to get there because you got the best. You have to understand how to work with people to get to where you want to go. And when I say people, I'm not just saying a person or people of a certain demographic, all people. So if there was I don't know if this is any inspiration, but I would say for me, if you know and understand people and you're crystal clear about where you want to go and you're willing to work hard and build relationships, I think you can go anywhere. I honestly do. And that's what I tell myself. That's what I tell people I mentor. That's what I tell my kids. And it's helped a lot of folks, right? And you have to believe it. And it's easy to believe it when everything is going your way, Gerald.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing, Gerald, there's no shortcuts.
Yeah.
I think a lot of folks, I don't want to make a disparaging remark about generational differences, but I do think if folks think there's an easy button to get to where you and I are today, that's not true, mm-hmm. right? And my life journey that I've explained here, there was many setbacks. I got my degrees as a working enlisted military person. I got all my degrees from associates to masters within an 8-year time frame compressed at the end of my career. I got my last degree while deployed to Iraq in the middle of a combat zone, right? And I'm not saying that doesn't make me special or anything, but I'm just showing that is a lot of times folks like, man, you're this, you're that. Well, this is the journey. This is the hustle that I had to do to get there, right? Nobody told me to go get my degree. Nobody, my wife couldn't make me do it. My dad, my mom couldn't make me do it. I had to go want to do it. And when the chips are down, that's when I have to stay motivated. That's when I have to. And of course, you need people outside supporting you and helping you, but you have to feel that.
Yeah.
And then I think you can, all right? I think a lot of people give up sooner, like the gift is right on the other side, but they give up too soon.
Mm-hmm. And that happens all too often. Well, Mac, you know, I always enjoy speaking with you. You know, I every now and then we send texts to each other about issues and so on. But I do count you as one of those people who I see as a rising star in this higher ed business. And what would my last question to you, it might be an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Okay.
What's next for Mac?
Well, I just sent an email to my supervisor asking to, I'd like to go pursue a doctorate.
Oh, all right.
Right? So, I mean, as a person who sets goals, I, you know, my family tells you, you're always putting something challenging in front of you, right? I'm like, Gerald, I'm 58. Is it too late? I don't know, right? But I want to have challenging goals in front of me. And so this is the next challenging goal. And it gives me a little bit of a little pause, but it's worthwhile doing. And then we'll see where God takes it from there, right? But I'd like to think that I have more to give and more people I can help in higher education, even beyond being a CIO. So that's what I'll say there.
Well, my brother, if it means anything, I'll just speak it into the atmosphere. I see you as a college president one day.
Thank you, sir.
I do see that. You have all the qualities that I've observed up close and personal in terms of leadership and change management and moving an organization and basically lifting people. And in our environment today, you can have all of the smarts you have, but as you said, if you're not empowering people and quite frankly, making hard decisions sometimes around people, you'll still be there. So Mac, I'll do like I do with all my guests. I want to give you the last 2 to 3 minutes that we have to share anything that's on your heart that you think will be of impact to the audience. And you know, you're such a wise brother. Just want to leave it with you to say anything that you want to close us out with.
Well, first off, I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you. And I can see you being a college president too, brother. I actually can see that happening. For me, I think I would want to see people listening to this, that they come away believing that whatever their dream, whatever their goal, whatever their life aspirations are, that they can achieve it. One, see it, right? You and I play golf, right? Now you probably play it better than I do. But I know when I'm playing my best golf, I see the shot before I hit it. Mm-hmm. I hear the click of the golf ball. I see the path that it takes. I see where it lands on the ground. I see far off. And the more crystal that is in my head, the better the execution. And I share that as an analogy to life. I think if you can see where you want to go, you can get there. So believe in yourself, surround yourself with good people, stay the course when you have setbacks. That's okay. It's going to happen. Nothing is ever linear. It's always jagged. Always. Anybody. Don't let them tell you that it's not. You'll get there.
Yeah.
You'll get there.
Yeah. Well, my brother, thank you so much. And I'll say it again. I'm humbled that you have joined me on my podcast here as we continue to try to inspire people to look at their stations in life through a different lens. So ladies and gentlemen, we've just spent the last almost hour with Keith Mac McIntosh. I keep saying this about him, a good brother. Whenever I run into him at conferences, last time we saw each other, I think we were in, I want to say California. I don't know where that was. But
always. I think that was down in Long Beach.
Long Beach, California. No, that's
yeah,
right.
Long Beach, yeah.
Long Beach, California. Always a good time to see you, my brother. Keep up the good work. You might not know this, but there are many of us that are watching you from a distance, and we are impressed by what you're doing. So keep doing
it. Thank you. Thank you.
And we'll keep praying for you, because now you got this doctorate journey on your radar. I'm going to be praying for you doubly. So,
yeah. And I'm going to need all the prayer I can get too, brother.
You'll get it done. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've just spent the last hour with us with Keith Mac McIntosh. And I hope something was said here today. A thought, a story, a narrative is shared that allows you to see your life through a different lens. And his life is one of so many that have been on this podcast that are inspirations to young people, teenage years, young people in the midst of launching their careers, and quite frankly, people who want to make a career shift. So I pray and hope that something was shared here today that will bless your life in immeasurable ways. And as always, this is It's Easy, Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. And until next week, stay safe, be strong, and be encouraged. Until next week, take care. Have a good week. Bye-bye. Mac, that was perfect, my brother.
Thank you. I hope that was good.
This is good, and I believe this is going to be a good episode. I could tell the good episodes. The authenticity and the story, it grabs you right in the chest. So well done, sir, and thank you. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you having me on, man. I was telling Penny, I said, I don't want you to ask me on this thing. He has some luminaries on his show. I'm like, I got this little Billy O. Mac here.
You're a luminary, my brother. All I need from you now, Mac, is a
Secret
headshot
bio.
Photo.
Yeah.
A headshot photo. And if you want to write us a brief bio, we'll write up the promotional materials. It will probably air not this upcoming Wednesday, but the Wednesday after.
Okay.
And I'll give you all of the stuff, and you'll get the playlist, you'll get the recordings, you can get the audio version, and we'll also have the what we call HBCU TV version. The producers will edit this down and all this kind of stuff. And it's going to be a good show. I feel it.
All right, I appreciate it, man. I'm looking forward to it. My daughter, who is an HBCU grad, as I said, I told her, I said, it's supposed to go on HBCU TV. She was excited.
Yep, it's going to be on HBCU TV, HBCU Nation. So we'll get you all that stuff long ahead of time so you can share with your family and friends.
All right, appreciate it, Chief.